What we're doing on iPlayer is something that's quite simple. There is an iPlayer, the HD channel appears on iPlayer as a channel, but more importantly, the iPlayer, every program that's available in HD, no matter how you get it, this is from the BBC One, if you like, channel, if it's available in HD, you've got the HD logo on it, so everybody knows, everybody can get it. It's a much better way of navigating than any Radio Times or any other EPG system. iPlayer tells you when it's in HD, and it's your choice which one you click. So, of course, what's coming next and what we expect to be the biggest single platform for HD, thinking the FreeSat and Sky are obviously, although different platforms, are on the same satellite system. The biggest single one we hope will be FreeView HD, just as it's the biggest single standard definition platform. We really hope that brings HD to virtually the reach of anybody and everybody that wants it. Just for those who want the technical details, we've gone with System 7 from the Ofcom. I put the website up there if anybody wants to go and read it. Detailed reading, I do recommend it when you've got nothing else to do. One of those really boring studios. But basically, that's what we expect from what's with the Ofcom statements. It's all there. It's worth going and having a look, actually, because I think it's going to be one of the most exciting things that's happened over the last couple of years in terms of development of television. Okay. So, how is HD doing? HD is a brand now. There's nothing more you can say. HD is a brand. What you get is obviously the Blu-rays. Now we've got a single platform for package media, which is good. That's taking off. We've got cameras, which are HD. We've got HD-ready small displays, HD-ready big displays, HD-ready boxes, HD-ready makeup, HD-ready sunglasses. I don't know why, but we have them. It's all about marketing, and actually what's happened, what it's shown is that high definition has become part of the standard thought process of people and marketeers.
Hi, my name's Felix, I'm excited because I've just been told this will be an HD, you can see me in HD. Why would you want to see anyone in HD? Do people look at other people and know I want to see everything about you? The TV is HD ready. It's HD ready. Ready? I don't have it, but it's ready. This is the TV, this is the sun. I'm ready. Okay, just so you know, I'm ready for HD. Anytime you want to get HD, ready. Totally prepared for it. No rush to get HD. But when you get it, what you will find is a television who's born ready for HD. And I was like, so if the TV in the bedroom is just sits there going, please don't get HD. I'm not ready. Totally unprepared, HD. I don't even really know what HD is.
So it's sort of become part of everyday events. But don't worry, you don't have to worry about it anymore. Marketeers are really fickle, they move on. And of course, now, hands up with confidence, everybody wearing 3D deodorant. So we can move on, we can forget about all the marketing, HD sunglasses, HD whatever you want, we're going to 3D versions of it all. There'll be things sticking out at you everywhere. It's going to be lovely. I can't wait to see the 3D porn channels. Okay. So, surveys. Always about surveys. And I'm really sorry to say that right down the bottom there is sound. It always happens. Why do people want HD? What do they want out of HD? 56% say they want superior channel, quality of the picture, programmes they want to watch in HD, they want to watch what they want to watch, and they want to watch it in HD. They don't want to watch HD programmes. So this thing about the Americans watching ants mating for weeks on end, actually, that dies after about 2 or 3 weeks. You can only watch so many ants mating. High quality programmes, that is in terms of editorial as well as technical standards. Then you'll be pleased to know, out of the rest, sound is the best. But it's a bit of a shame, and it doesn't change, no matter how long you have HD, this doesn't change. So now we're 3 years in, it's still roughly the same. I think sound's dropped even further. So it's a bit of a problem, and we have a bit of a problem with sound, and I think, really, it's because the television has always been seen separately as the sound source. In other words, the television speakers have always been used. And there's nothing you can do about it. It's real estate if you want to pump 5 speakers around your room. And then we know that people sit at 45 degrees the way they sit. And the Zenith speaker is probably put behind the telly anyway, pointing upwards, out of the way, on its side. The sub is actually probably in the cupboard, which is probably good for it. But, you know, it does get a bit boomy after a while and turned right up. notice that every time I go away, it's turned right up. It is a problem. We had, when we started, a dubbing theatre ring us up and say, we're going to charge you a licence for doing a Dolby E transfer. Right. Anybody has Tony's back? I rang him and said, they're going to charge me a licence to do this. I will pay it. And for every single programme we do, when you give me a certificate for every single one of our outlets that has been Dolby compliant. So just think about that for a while. How many households? 24 million households? I want the speakers nailed down. I want the volume control, and we'll send the metadata of how loud to set it, just like every seminar. That went away very quickly. But it is a different world. When you go and watch something in a cinema, it is set for sound. It is what you expect. If it's poor, you complain, and you'll quite rightly get Dolby down there dealing with a cinema if it's not doing what it's supposed to do. You will quite rightly get someone, THX is not right, will have someone come in and do something about it. It doesn't happen in the home. You're lucky if the speakers are in the right order. You're really lucky if they're not all sitting together. And you're amazingly lucky if actually they're all working. So what I want to talk about today, and the meat of this, is the BBC's bold experiment and trial of reverse karaoke. In other words, we'll send you the vocals, and you provide the music. Did anybody hear the Eurovision Song Contest of 2008? Oh, miserable. Nobody? Okay. Good. So I arrive home a little bit late. So you've got to get my daughter a lot in this, because she has a point of view about what I watch, especially then, before she turned into a stroppy teenager. So she arrived home and I turned on the Eurovision Song Contest, which immediately caused an argument. But there was something not quite right with it, and I wasn't sure what was going on. So this is going to take a few seconds to set up. So what I just want you to think about is, how long do you think it took me to spot that something was not right with this program? Hold on 1 second. What I've got here, is the actual transport stream that we transmitted, running on a BBC laptop. It should work, eventually. But what I have discovered is that I have to turn half the computer off to make it run, because it's a full data stream.
Profile events, the Cannes Film Festival, the Monaco Grand Prix, and oh yes, the Eurovision
Song Contest. Sounds fine so far. Oh, I see. Not too sure at this point. Although I think that's
the welcome to Belgrade, Poland, Plutsky, on the confluence of the rivers Sava and Danube. Which is why they're calling this year's Eurovision the Conference of Sound.
Maybe we're on just by those
description number when you heard some of the entries tonight. 25 of them. So you and I are going to need all the pluck and dogged determination we can muster if we're to make it to the end of what will be a very long evening. Choral tributes. I'll not anticipate your pleasure by attempting to describe some of the painful musical mayhem that lies ahead. Look, if I had to sit through this, the least you can do is join me. But all end in tears, more likely hysteria. We're going to hear from Marika Serefovic. The reason we're here, because last year she won this Eurovision Song Contest.
So I'm suspicious by now, so I'll pop over to BBC One, and because King's War are so good. BBC One's
Jeanette Cranky.
And I was enjoying Logan, of course.
Okay, well, I'll be having a
now. I'm really suspicious.
Be your catastrophe.
I think you'll agree, there's something definitely wrong. So back to BBC One. Spot what was missing. Anyway, if you're like me, you think that's not right. We need to do something about it. So, thank you. I was looking at the front of the panel, my little thingy, my doofree, my little sound amplifier. And because it's got a bit dull, because it's always been on, and I had to turn it on and off again to find out what was going on, it was 1.1. It sounded 1.1, but we're locked at that point in 5.1, so we're still saying 5.1. No, it wasn't actually saying 1.1. Something going on here, something odd. We were locked in 5.1 because we had a switching problem. And I got grief from a lot of people, but Dolby put out this press release to say why several channels have decided to lock themselves into 5.1 mode. Now, there was not allowed 2.0 5.1 switching because of clicks, bangs and thumps and muting that was going on domestic devices. Rowan will talk a little bit about what was happening on those, but it was quite annoying, and some AV amplifiers did it, some just glossed over it, and one or two of the really expensive ones muted for about a second every time we did it.
Late.
Yeah, absolutely. Don't matter. You didn't miss anything at all. Only Terry Wogan. So we were a bit concerned. So we locked the channel in 5.1. So this shouldn't have happened. What I was hearing was impossible. For those of you who know, I rang Redby immediately, and they were all blissfully unaware. In fact, when I picked the phone up, it was very loud, and they said they were listening to 5.1. Everything was fine. Everything hunky dory. So we started tracing all the sound back, and all the way back to the studio, everybody was absolutely perfectly happy with what was going on. But by that point, we were into the UK entry, and I'm not going to play that, because the UK entry without its backing vocals and backing music isn't pleasant. So we had to go to BBC One upconverted, because at that point we were still very early in the channel and we had no way of getting the stereo audio from BBC One onto the HD pictures and maintaining sync. It just wasn't possible at that point. So straight onto BBC One, upconverted, poor pictures, oh dear, never mind, let them get on with it. I will let them get on with it and ring back later. So that's that. So we've had a few problems with sound. Before Rowan comes up, I'll just give you some of them. A PROMS live contribution link just wouldn't let the Dolby E through. It was going in one end and wasn't coming out the other. Electric PROMS, coda reference. So everything was fine. The coda said, admittedly, contribution coda said, absolutely fine, you're in external syncs, it's all going well. No, it wasn't. The display said external syncs, the coda was in internal syncs. Or was it the other way around? Whatever it wasn't working. So what was coming at the other end was a chunk of Dolby E, a chunk of silence, chunk of Dolby E, chunk of silence. As you heard it, you know exactly what it is. Errors all over the place. The PROMS, we put out a 1.0 program because there was corrupted metadata and it decided that 1.0 was the only one that really worked well. Not only that, it did the neg 30. So we went from this amazing trial. Amazing trial. It sounded fine in the broadcast domain. This only happens in the set-top box because it's corrupted metadata. So everything's fine there. Decode it, and that's what you get. Crap. Olympics, video timing, video reference problem into the encoder. The whole of the opening ceremony of Olympics was in stereo. By this time, we could do the stereo audio, but we missed the opening stereo, opening 5.1. Strictly Come Dancing, recent one, metadata issue. That was very interesting. Sound supervisor thought he was mixing to no dynamic range control setting. He actually had a dynamic range control setting turned on. And in my demo room, we can turn. You can actually take the tape, the recording from the OB, pump in and out of the settings he thought he was mixing to, and the settings he was actually mixing to, and you can hear the mix come alive and collapse. Only heard at home. So he didn't know about it until he got home. I knew about it because I was at home. All those things, absolutely fatal. They make it unlistenable to. Anyway, let me pass you over to Rowan now. He's going to do the next few minutes.
Okay, hello. Right, okay, so as we mentioned at the start, my name's Rowan, I'm from BBC Research and Development, and I joined about 2.5 years ago. At the time I was sort of a graduate trainee, and a year in, I got asked to do a project working with Andy, looking at some of the problems we'd had. So I was kind of thrown in at the deep end. Here's this thing, Dolby E, that I'd never really come across. And a whole bunch of surround sound that I couldn't afford to have at home, and here, go fix it. So, it was an interesting challenge. What I'll do is I'll just give you a quick overview of like how an HD OB makes it to air at the BBC, and then a quick summary of some of the key things to do with Dolby E that have caused us issues, and then a bit about how we went about fixing some of the issues. So, this is an outside broadcast represented by a camera. Via some kind of link, that comes into CCA, which is the Central Communications Area in Television Centre, sort of central routing point for the delivery network, if you will. If it's an outside insert into a live studio programme, then it'll go down to a studio. It'll come back up to CCA again. Then it heads off out of Television Centre, down the road to the Broadcast Centre, into the playout centre, which is where the channel is created, all the programmes and interstitials are mixed together, continuity is done and so on, and then back up the road to Television Centre into CCA for one more time. Finally, it heads down to coding and multiplex. Coding and multiplex, where the digital signal is put together for broadcast. So that's sort of what the signal path looks like. Complicated enough before you start worrying about who owns it all. In the brave new world of the BBC, we start with an outside broadcast company. We've got two different bits of Siemens running CCA and coding and MUX. We've got, I'm slightly out of date, we have BBC Studios and Post-Production, now they're called, running the studio, and Red Bee Media running Playout. So job number one was go and examine all these areas and figure out just exactly what happens in each area and put it all together. Because we sort of knew this, and each area knew what was going on in their area, but nobody really had the overview. So job number two, right, get my head around Dolby E. Okay, so for anybody who isn't familiar with it, Dolby E is a data stream format for sticking up to 8 channels of audio into an AES-3 stereo carrier, basically. It also takes a whole bunch of metadata, which makes it useful, albeit sometimes problematic for us, because it means that the sound supervisor can set certain metadata settings that make it all the way through the broadcast chain to the set-top box. So that's really useful. It's designed for use with video, so it's split into frames, the same as video, in our case, at 25 a second. So if this is a video frame, this box, then in timing terms, your Dolby E frame sits within it, right? It's slightly shorter, and you'll notice there's a gap at the start and end. Dolby call that the guard band, and it's there for a very good reason. It's so that when you cut the video a few frames into it, you don't cut through the Dolby E frame. Now, there's some flexibility in the spec. You can have your Dolby E frame start at a few different points in relation to the start of the frame. So you can do that, and that still cuts fine. Problem is, when you get outside the spec, then you end up with something like this. You cut through the Dolby E frame, and because of the way that the data is encoded, the entire frame has to reach the destination as a single entire entity for it to make any sense whatsoever. So if you do that, the entire frame is bust. Now that means one of a few things. Well, one of two things, really. Hopefully, that means that downstream, an encoder is going to see a bust Dolby E frame and you're going to get a mute for a 25th of a second. It's not particularly great, but what's worse is when a downstream encoder doesn't see a buggered Dolby E frame, it just sees some numbers in an AES stream. So what it sees is what it thinks is PCM audio, but it's not. And so what you get is a very loud splat, which doesn't do your speakers any good. So, no. So, we start, just to give you a kind of a rough idea, we've got a range of a range of available positions that the Dolby frame can start, somewhere between 13 and 53 frames, if you're particularly interested. That's in 1080i PAL, which is what we work in. It's actually in time relative to the start of the video frame, so in a different video standard, the line numbers will be different. So, what all this means is that your Dolby needs to be in the right place with reference to your video, in particular when you want to start synchronizing your video. So a video frame synchronizer will adjust some incoming video to match a local sync reference. That's great. Every now and again, it probably has to repeat or delete a frame to make sure you stay in sync. That kind of works okay. And with Dolby E, that still works okay. You delete a frame and a frame disappears. So you've got a very tiny gap in your audio, but nobody's going to notice. It'll all be fine. Problem is, if your Dolby E's misaligned, then you delete a frame, and that happens. So you're not only missing a bit, but you're missing at least two frames, because that last frame there is totally unusable, and you've possibly messed up the one before as well. So that gets really, really, really noticeable. So synchronizing video becomes a problem. So, with our outside broadcast, what do you do? Because obviously everything needs to be synced up, because if you don't synchronize the video and the audio, then your Dolby is going to be all over the place and it's going to be worse still. So in an outside broadcast situation, what we tend to do is stick a sync pulse generator at the OB and synchronize every piece of kit off it. Now, this is where there's some sort of some relearning to be done, because you have to plug your audio kit into your video sync pulse generator as well, because otherwise your audio won't be in sync with your video, and your Dolby will die. So that all works great, no problem, okay, hopefully. We have, of course, had issues, electric PROMs, where the Tandberg encoder told us that it was using an external sync reference, and actually, no, it wasn't. So that was a bit of a problem. It was using its own free-running sync, and everything went horribly wrong. But if you assume that everything's syncing off the SPG, you're fine. But then back in CCA, the right-hand side of this, what do you do then? Because you've got a local sync pulse generator. It's almost certainly not in sync with the one at the OB. Now, you could get them in sync, but it's an awful lot of effort, and it's not reliable, really. So then you've got the problem of having to sync up an incoming video signal with the local sync pulse and not screw your Dolby E. So what we end up having to do here is use an IRD integrated receiver decoder, which will take the incoming MPEG transport stream. It will decode the video and extract the audio, but you don't sync it to the SPG. The reason being that they tend to have internal frame syncs, and those internal frame syncs don't know about Dolby E. So if during your link your Dolby E has got out of sync with your video, which, believe it or not, is possible, even if it's embedded, then you're going to mess it up. So you have to use an external frame sync, and you have to spend a bit more on your frame sync and get one that knows about Dolby E. And then what it will do is it will make sure the Dolby E is in sync with the video before synchronizing the video with the reference. Hopefully, then you're all okay. So we had a lot of problems with these bits not working at various points in the chain. But having understood the issues, we made sure all our frame synchronizers were there and that we got the right models in the right places that knew about Dolby E, and we thought, right, we're all good, okay. Next problem you've got is that Dolby E decodes incur a fixed one-frame delay. Dolby E encodes incur a fixed one-frame delay. So what happens when you've got embedded audio, and then you decode it because it's Dolby E, and then you want to listen and watch your content? Your audio is a frame behind. Okay, fair enough. Starting up the channel, not sure what to do, so let's try and be clever. Let's advance the audio by a frame when you're embedding it, because that way, when you decode it, then it's all in sync with the video and with the stereo linear audio. But that causes you problems, because then when you want to start cutting the video without decoding the Dolby E, you end up being with your cuts out of sync by a frame in terms of the audio and video. So you just have to bite the bullet, and every time you encode or decode Dolby E, you have to have a corresponding frame of video delay. Okay, not too problematic, you'd think. It's a whole frame, it's not variable, it's nice and easy. Yeah, problem was that within 2 weeks of starting, I'd found that we already had one problem like that. And remarkably, people were being too clever and had double compensated. So we'd ended up with two frames of video delay in one place, compensating for one frame of audio delay. And a frame of video delay really, really just doesn't look nice. It's the wrong way round. So there I am putting together a map of the whole delivery chain and thinking, bloody hell, I can't keep track of all these delays. So I stopped using standard notation for anything and just invented my own. We have here a very simple block that represents any device in the chain. Four colour-coded boxes on the bottom which note the delay through that device. Four. That's one for the video, one for PCM non-Dolby encoded audio, because we always carry that separately for the stereo track as well at the moment. One for the Dolby E audio, and one for the metadata, which of course is carried in the Dolby E, so should never get out of sync, except that there are places in the chain where we remove the metadata from the Dolby E as well. And if you get your metadata out of sync, then that's a whole other world of problems. So this is a small chunk of the red B playout area, okay? You don't need to worry about reading what all of the devices are, but basically speaking, there is a vision mixer and associated audio mixer in the middle, which do all the presentation changes, so moving from one program to another, between adverts and so on. And the audio mixer also has continuity voiceovers coming into it. Now, you can't mix in extra audio while you're encoded in Dolby E. So in order to do that, to add the voiceovers, we have to decode the Dolby E. So you've got to de-embed it. To be safe, we have a Dolby E reframer and video synchronizer on the start, just to make sure. And then you've got to decode. Do all your voiceovers and other mixing in a linear PCM domain, and then re-encode and re-embed. Fine, okay, no problem, grand. This, as it happens, was where we had the wrong number of video frames. But that's all sorted, so if you follow it through, this is slightly simplified, actually, from the real world, but broadly speaking, there's a frame of delay on everything except the video for four items there, so we put 160 milliseconds, or four frames of delay, on the video at the embedder. Everybody's happy, we're in sync at the start, we're in sync at the end. So that was kind of how we chased the delays through. But then you get all sorts of weird, unexpected problems cropping up. So I was, you know, started off thinking, right, this is a self-contained area. As long as things are in sync when they leave and in sync when they arrive, we're happy, yeah? Problem. You've got an automation system controlling the mixer and the router so that they work together. So let's say you want to create a V-fade, right? So your video fades to black and your audio fades to silence, and then it fades up into the new source. Great, fine, nice, easy, do it all the time. Problem being that where that arrow is, you will notice there is no delay in the video chain, and there are three frames of delay in the audio chain. Worse still, the automation system doesn't know about those three frames of delay. So what that means is that it's going to use one bus, and it's going to have the outgoing source on it, it's going to fade it down to silence, then it's going to switch the incoming source onto that bus and fade up into the new source. But it expects that switch to happen at the point when you're at silence, where that correct switch point is. So it goes down to silence, you switch to the new source, you fade it back up again. Problem is, there's three frames of delay. So if you've got a five-frame fade, then what actually happens is that the outgoing source starts slowly getting louder again before suddenly switching to the incoming source. That's not that easy to hear what's going on when you're fading up from silence and within 100 milliseconds it's changed to a new source. So that one took us quite a long time to figure out. The solutions there are not easy. You've either got to put some delay into your automation system, which ours didn't allow, Or you've basically got to change your V fades into U fades, i.e. stick a couple of frames of silence and black in the middle. So that one took us a while. So with all these kind of problems, you've really got to pay attention to what's going on, which means monitoring, and lots of it. So, monitoring Dolby can't be that hard. You've got some audio. Hopefully we would all agree that you actually are going to want to pay attention to what the audio content is, listen to it, that kind of thing. Then you're encoding that as Dolby. Then you're putting that into an AES carrier and embedding that in HDSDI. Now that's three levels of digital carriers right there. Each of those can have errors. Each of those have CRC checks and so on. And then you've got Dolby with its metadata as well. So all of those things have to be checked to make sure that it's really right. That's a lot of stuff to pay attention to. So, fine, you go out and you find a very expensive tool that monitors all these things. This is a Tektronix WFM 7100 series. We have these in CCA and in Red B, and that's all grand. So when something comes in that's wrong, some very clever people can go and look at this device, and they can look at all the different things and hopefully find the problem. But even if we assume that works, there's a basic problem that the metadata starts back with the sound supervisor. Sound supervisor's not going to want to look at one of them. He's got far more important things to worry about than learning how the hell you use a device like that. So then we have to find some simpler devices that will show you the key things you need to know. So this is a TSL AMU, which provides the actual audio monitoring and, you know, bar graphs for each channel and so on. But crucially, it also allows them to look at the encoded Dolby E and see what the metadata parameters in it are. Because we've had situations where, as Andy said, where the sound soup thinks he's mixing to one thing and something else is coming out of the encoder. And the encoders aren't particularly intuitive to operate either. So it's quite easy to get a setting wrong. So this allows you just to make sure that your settings are what you think they are. So in the surround sound monitoring room at Television Centre, we have a setup that looks something like this. I won't go through all of it, but broadly speaking, what they're monitoring there is the stereo PCM mix, the 5.1 before it's encoded. Then they encode, embed, de-embed and decode the Dolby E, so put it through an entire encode-embed chain, and then listen to it decoded. And then you can listen to the stereo downmix of the Dolby E, because, of course, we only transmit 5.1 on the HD channel, so anyone listening in stereo is going to hear a 5.1 downmix, not the separate stereo mix. And then there's an off-air feed, so they can check that if you're going out live, you can check that what's coming back at you is actually what you think. And, of course, the metadata monitoring in the TSL unit. Phew, that's quite a lot. But then it can still go wrong. So what happens? The thing is, there's always going to be things that are out of our control, yeah? So what happens if, in the Eurovision case, it actually had been the host broadcaster messing it up? We're not going to get them on the phone to change their settings straight away. We can't rely on that, especially if they're feeding lots of other broadcasters and other people aren't complaining. So one of the things we ended up doing was installing our emergency sidechain in CCA. So the signal goes through CCA at least twice during between OB and broadcast. So what we do is we just have a little sidechain that can be switched into the circuit path, whereby we de-embed, decode, encode and re-embed the audio. And the reason for that is that that means we've got then control over the metadata when we re-encode. If we so choose, we can throw away the incoming metadata and set what we think is right. Wouldn't make you popular with your sound supervisor, but on the other hand, if you need to get something to air and get it working, it's what you do. Equally, we've got the Dolby decoders and encoders in there. And the reason mostly behind that is that we know they are more forgiving than some. So the Dolby decoder will decode things that some gear won't. So if you decode and re-encode using the Dolby gear, then you're not guaranteed, but you're more likely to get a decently aligned signal out the end. Equally, if the timing isn't quite right and the Dolby is a bit late or a bit early in the frame, then by doing this you push it back into line and hopefully everything is okay downstream. So there we go. That is where we got to with trying to solve some of our problems. And I'll let Andy carry on before I tell you about how we solved the user's problems at home.
Okay, so... I don't think I've turned it off. Oh, look, it's got a knob on it. That's better. Yep, thank you. It's sound. I don't do sound. So we're still on SD Pictures. I'm getting tired of ringing up and hearing lovely 5.1 sound and getting reports that the pictures are looking stunning. But we still can't hear them at home and nobody can understand what's going on. You get to the sound supervisor, he's got more fingers, or faders than fingers, sorry, in this particular situation. He's in a live situation, he's being shouted at by a director, or producer rather, who's discovered this is going on because someone from home's run, and he's not too happy and won't let anybody in. But... we've got some issues with picture quality. This is just going off on one of these side chains. We've got a few issues with picture quality. We are in a situation where we can make stunning pictures. We can get those pictures up to a satellite and we can put them into a set-top box and we can get that connected by a proper HDMI connector into an HD-ready display. That's all fine. Guy comes in, installs it. Everything's wonderful. We have seen some of the installation guides from a rival broadcaster, which suggests that after you leave, or before you leave, rather, you return the installation to exactly the way it was before, which means that just before you go, after it's all working, you do this. You plug that in. We need to ban the SCART, because the next time you turn it on, pin 8 in the SCART says, ah, set-top box, Delhi. I'll change to input AV1 or O2, whatever it is. And it changes to the SD input, so you get a nice brief flash of HD, and then you go to SD. And most of our problems in the first year were people not watching HD with very expensive tellies and very expensive boxes. And I found someone else 2 days ago that actually is in that situation, has a SCART lead plugged in, and has been saying he doesn't really understand what HD is all about. It looks exactly the same as it always is. Maybe a little bit clearer, but exactly the same as it always used to. But we're quite passionate about the picture quality. We are really passionate. So passionate that this is what is not HD. Believe it or not, I have to tell producers this still again and again and again. Standard definition upconverted is not HD. Just because it's got 1,000 lines or more, it doesn't make it HD. HDV is not HD. I don't care what anybody says in the supermarket or Currys or Dixon's, it's not HD. Cameras with sensors under 0.5 inch are not HD traditionally, because that actually was a catch-all to catch all these tiny little camcorders this big that a producer would rush in and say, look, Panasonic, just give me this, it's got full HD written on the side, it says so, 1080p, it's better than what you're doing with that big Sony camera. No, it's not. This may change soon because there are a lot of nice 1/3 inch cameras, especially the little mini cams coming out now, and we hopefully will change that very, very soon. Frame-based or intraframe coding, below 100 megabits a second was not traditionally HD, although now we're getting this 2-to-1 idea with ABC, MPEG-4 versus MPEG-2. Traditional formats have been MPEG-2-based. We are beginning to see some MPEG-4-based codecs now in production. So 50 megabits looks like ABC 50i, looks like it's going to be acceptable. I'm still doing tests on that. Interframe, in other words, long op codecs, 50 megabits was always our borderline. ABC HD, though, the domestic format turned pro, looks like 25 and 35 megabits, 25 for news, current affairs type programs, 35 for the sort of self-op programs. Looks like it might be good enough, which is quite exciting because that's HD affordable at all program levels. We're not talking about the landmarks now. We're talking about any program being made in HD. We've got other things about 35mm film. People think just because it was 35mm film and they got it on a digibeta, it's HD. And they upconvert it.
There's two things wrong with that, and it's so horrible we don't go there. Non-linear editing codecs at 100... I had to be really careful when I wrote this one. 160 megabits doesn't exist anywhere as an editing codec. There isn't one out there, as far as I know, until someone proves me wrong, at 160. That is the figure that Kings of Warren came up with, R&D came up with, that is about transparent. In other words, if you're below that, you start to get concatenation with other formats. Above that, actually, you're getting away with it. So it's not 185, it's not anything, nothing else, nothing that tells you it's a manufacturer. I would have bought 161 if I had to, if someone did what I do, 160, and we found 160 wasn't good enough. It was just an arbitrary number that was above, very slightly, the threshold that R&D said was minimum standard. Live contribution, 60 megabits. We're actually getting there now. That, again, was to stop people trying to chuck them through SD links. We're at about 54 megabits, I think, on some IP links we're getting now. So it's beginning to get good. Just as the transmission systems are getting more rugged, we're getting more bits in our megahertz. So this is really, really good for that. 720 line equipment is not HD. That really upsets most of Europe. But we have an exception. Panasonic Varicam, without that, Planet Earth wouldn't have been made. No natural history would be made without the Varicam. There is not another variable frame rate camera out there that does it. Still, that's 5 years that camera has had the lead. It's looking a bit old and tired now, but of course they've revamped it with the tapeless versions, the P2 versions. There's still nobody else that can do it. And the last one, which pisses off everybody in drama, is Super 16. It's not HD. The grain is huge, absolutely huge. I'm not going to go any further. The other thing is small cameras. There are some very, very good small cameras. And there are some very, very good small recorders. Unfortunately, they tend to be by different manufacturers. So it's time for broadcasters to become far more assertive. This is the small broadcaster's camera. The broadcaster's small camera. I would buy hundreds of these. In fact, we think of probably about 600 in the BBC. In other words, you can see the Panasonic and Sony. That really upsets both of them when I show it. But we have to be more assertive. It's very important. You would go bananas if I said we're going to cut the bit rates of all the audio because it doesn't fit on my little mini disc or mini SD disc or gold card, which is effectively what they're saying to the video. It hasn't happened in audio yet because you tend to fit on all the cards you can get any video on, SD or HD, but it could happen. As video gets smaller and smaller and smaller, when it passes below the audio levels, they're going to start looking at audio at bit rates. Right, small cameras. Time to see a bit more video. Just have a look at this. Suddenly realise, Mike, was that yours? No, it's all right then. There's a nasty edit underneath that voice over there. Small camera used in with an OB environment. It's getting there. We're getting very close to it. And unfortunately, that program was made in stereo, but it was a very good program. Everybody saw it. But it was the first use, if you like, on air of those small cameras at a wrong bit rate, so we really kept it low. So back to the karaoke, which by this point was getting to be quite a joke in our household. I'd be on the phone for about 2 hours. My daughter had run out of credit, and there were several boys that needed to call her, and she needed to call, and I wasn't allowed to use the phone. What did I think I was doing? This was an awful program, etc., etc. Everybody's getting earful on one side while trying to be on Red B on the other side, apologising to the network director. And we were getting really worried. But this point, I'd started to say, this is metadata. This is metadata. This problem is nothing to do with what's going on in Television Centre through the chain. This is source. So this is either coming in or this is going as being generated in Television Centre at the first point. We did a quick experiment through the chain. Red B managed to grab hold of the incoming feed directly from the satellite, which no one knew they could do actually at that point, pumped it through, and they said they're getting decoding. They managed to decode the 5.1. So at that point, we knew something with Inside Television Centre was doing something bad. And basically, we were getting back from the studio. The green lights are on this box. Everything looks fine. We've got all the lights up on the decoder. We can hear it through the DB570, isn't it? The monitoring box. Everything looks good. But I hadn't pressed the AC3 button. Then everything would look bad. So I had an idea. I got a very friendly chap who I got to know very well that evening to walk up with his mobile phone into the gallery and knock on the door very quietly and say, I've got Andy Quest on the phone. He says, can I have a quick look at your encoder? And he said yes. And he rummaged through the settings and found the one setting that Dolby have now taken out. So if you've got it in your Dolby encoder, you haven't upgraded your software for 5 years. So do it. It's AC3 or Dolby D metadata. If you've got Dolby D, it's probably 7 years. But AC3 was the later one, metadata enable disable. It was disabled. He pumped it to enable and left. But because we've been pissing around so much, we come to the nub of the whole evening. We didn't know whether we were in sync or not, because people have been shoving units in to find out replacing units. So we had to have a quick burst of the program on air with me at home saying it's in 5.1 and it's in sync. And then they just did it for 5 seconds and back again. So anybody watching will suddenly see a quick burst of HD and then back to SD. Amazingly, by that time, Red Beer got the entire thing in sync. We could have gone to stereo, sound and HD. So we've been shuffling everything around. There was an amazing chain, but because they've been doing that, we weren't sure exactly what was happening. Now, as Rowan has said, we work on the in-sync encoded principle, which means we can slice a video stream or a stream at any point and go through the video at the frame we want, the audio, the PCM audio at the frame, and the Dolby encoded audio will happen at the same analog point, for want of a better word, as the PCM tracks. In other words, you'll cut between the same syllables. That's really important to know, because wherever it goes, you know that that package is in sync. No matter what processing has to be done to it before or afterwards, that package is in sync. And this is where we come into what Rowan's going to talk about next, which you missed your summary slide, didn't you? I think you're onto that one. Yeah, that one there.
Thank you.
You see, I'm really sorry, I don't have any good bits of video to show you. This is always where I feel like the boring one in this presentation, but there we go. So, not content with fixing our own problems, we decided that really we should start fixing the viewers' problems as well. Basically, through all the kind of first bit of work I did, we got the chain confidently in sync to within a frame. Great, okay, fine, that's kind of good enough. You know, nobody's going to notice less than a frame out of sync. But the problem is that at home, a lot of people will have a set-top box connected to their nice LCD or plasma television and connected to their fantastic audio decoder amplifier. Well, we'll hope that most of them have got a nice audio decoder. Which is all very well and good, apart from the fact that that display almost certainly introduces some delay in the video. Anywhere up to about 2 frames, 2.5 frames, that's 100 milliseconds. That's a lot, especially when you consider that's delaying the video, which is totally and utterly unnatural and counterintuitive. If you think about your basic physics, light travels faster than sound. We are used to hearing things slightly after we see them. And to an extent, for a small amount, we can cope with that. Video, being late, really, really horrible to watch. So, okay, Sky and a lot of the free sat boxes, they provide a solution. They provide a variable delay on the audio output. So when your audio output's going through your AV receiver that doesn't have much delay in it, then you can actually artificially put some delay in there to compensate for your screen. Fantastic, everybody's happy. Only how do you set that up? How do you know how much delay your television has? Because they sure as hell don't tell you. So we could try and tell people that they should go and give it a go and tweak their settings, but they're only going to be able to line it up on lip sync in programs, and that's not a reliable way to do decent sync testing, especially if you're not experienced at it. So we wanted to broadcast a sync test so that people could have a look at home and see this wonderful in-sync test coming at their television and see whether it was out of sync, and if so, adjust their box accordingly. Brilliant. Problem is, when you want to broadcast a sync test, being in sync to within a frame doesn't really seem good enough. It would be a little embarrassing if we got everybody in the country to get their boxes in sync to a signal that was 30 milliseconds out of sync. That wouldn't be good. So, first things first, let's get our broadcast chain in sync. Like, properly in sync. So we've got to have a test to broadcast. So it's got to be easy to look at by eye and see, am I out of sync by a frame or two frames or more? It's also really got to be easy to measure automatically to a much higher level of precision. So, to get that all happening and get it to air, it's got to be in sync on a tape, right? It's got to be measured accurately. And then the broadcast chain has to be in sync, and it's got to get to the home in sync. So, we have a test that looks a little like this. It's based on some BBC R&D work from a few years back, slightly tweaked. And there's three elements to it, but first of all, can I play it? I don't know where it is on the P2, sorry. Oops. Fantastic. This probably isn't in sync before anybody points it out. Right, so that's what it looks like.
Actually, can we do an experiment?
No. Yeah. It'll fail.
No. We know it's not going to be in sync because you've got no compensating audio delay here. Any volunteer?
Go on.
Okay. Come and tell me how far out of sync that picture is.
Can I come up to far?
Yeah. Please do.
Something about there.
The way to do it is to stick your thumb in. Stick it there, it passes, and then there it, move it gradually, and at some point, your thumb hits it. You move it further along, you begin to notice. Oh, you do it that way, you notice when it changes. So actually, that's two frames.
Yep. Which is about right. It's about what we expect for that type of display. So, there's three elements to that. There's this plunger at the top, which just hits the bottom when you hear the clap, and that's kind of nice and simple. It's, to be honest, probably the least useful bit. A quick aside, the noise you heard was a recording of two wooden blocks being snapped together. They actually did a whole load of subjective listening tests, decided that that was much, much easier to work with for a human being than a bit of tone or an artificial click of any kind. It's got really, really harsh transients, but also a reasonably sensible decay. Subjectively, based on a load of tests with a load of people, they reckoned it was the best thing. So then there's this bit along the bottom, and this really is how you do it by eye. Okay. So as Andy said, you watch the bar expanding along, and you do it tick mark by tick mark, and you say, okay, has the bar reached here before I can hear the click? And that tells you how many frames out of sync you are. So assuming the test is in sync, this allows the user to get at least within a frame. And most people, actually, after a bit of trying, can do about half a frame accuracy using this. Then you've got these white flashes which appear just for one frame at the same time as the click. And they are useful for automatic measurement. So there's three of them. They're at the start of the active picture, the start of the safe area, and the middle of the picture. Now, with a scanning television, i.e. a CRT, they occur at 0 milliseconds, 1 millisecond, and 10 milliseconds after the click starts. So based on which one you're looking at, you need to pay attention to the fact that they will not actually be in sync. And of course, you have to use a CRT to measure it, because if you use an LCD or a plasma, it's got delay, and that's the problem we're trying to solve in the first place. So, this is our very glamorous little test box, knocked up in labs at Kingswood Warren. It has an audio input, which is analogue, so you do have to decode your Dolby E, and you do have to make sure you account for the decode delay. And then it has a light probe that you hold up against one of those little lines, and when it flashes, you get a number on the display that tells you how out of sync you are. Fantastic. Right, okay. So, we've designed the sync test. We've got it in sync on tape. Brilliant. So then, the way we're broadcasting this to the home is in the Barker, the promo loop that runs these days during the day on BBC HD. So it's sort of a two-hour loop. Is it still 2 hours, Andy? Yeah, and once every 2 hours, this plays for 30 seconds. 2 minutes? Bloody hell. God, I can't listen to it for 2 minutes. So it goes into the edit and it gets dropped into the marker at the appropriate place. Then it goes up to the dumbing suite. And this is where we have to worry about it, because this is the place where we can adjust the timing of the audio with relation to the video precisely enough. In the edit suite, you can only do it to the nearest video frame, and we've already established that we're trying to do better than that. The dubbing suite, we can do it by audio samples, which are considerably shorter. So that's great. So then once we've done the dub, we Dolby encode it all and lay it back off to tape. Fantastic. Take it down to the edit suite, because that is where there's an HD CRT. There isn't one in the dubbing suite. And then we can measure it. And it's wrong. It was always going to be wrong the first time. Probably it shouldn't have been wrong 5-6 times. But after an afternoon of literally running up and down the stairs in Television Centre, we got back round the loop for the final time, and we got it in sync. 0 milliseconds offset. Fantastic. Very, very, very happy with that. OK, great. So you've got the Barker on tape. It's in sync. Eek. Right. This now comes the difficult bit. Now we have to get it to the home in sync. So we ingest it onto the playout servers in Red Bee Media. That's great. Fine. OK, no problem. Then we play it out. And we actually run it through the entire playout chain, off air, the reserve chain, and up the road to CCA. Because, again, Red Bee don't have an HD CRT, but CCA do. So, no problem, we get out there. Actually, I think they do have one, but we couldn't route it the right way at the right time, so we just gave up and went to CCA. So we measure it there, and we get an offset that is a small number of milliseconds. It was about 3, if I remember rightly. Then we have to do the last part of the chain, which is the emission coding, so the digital TV encoding process, the bit where you decode from Dolby E and encode to Dolby Digital for transmission to the home. Now, this was all done. There isn't a reserve chain that we can actually monitor without broadcasting Television Centre, but we do, thankfully, have a duplicate chain at BBC R&D in Kingswood Warren. So we did the whole thing there, and we measured it again. So that gave us 2 numbers, which we then took back to the emission encoders in Coding and Mux, and that's great, fantastic. OK, we've got a number. Now all we can do is broadcast it and hope that it's right. So that's exactly what we did. So we broadcast it, and we measured it at Kingswood Warren, and we hoped that it was going to be right. So this is how you use the light probe. This was an earlier version of the test that was green. We now use a grey one. I won't go into the arguments over the colour, but trust me, there were proper arguments over the colour. But then you've got one final problem. How do you measure it off air? You run it through a skybox? Yeah, well, no, I don't trust one of those to keep everything in sync. Equally with any... Equally, I wouldn't trust any other set-top box. So we actually recorded the transport stream itself. So stick that onto a hard disk, and then you decode it in non-real time using a computer analysis package, and you get the analog waveform and the video frame numbers. And there you can see that the click starts right in the highlighted frame, which is the frame where the flash happens. And actually, by checking out what audio sample number, we can get right down to the milliseconds. And after weeks of making this work, we broadcast it, and first time to air, it was within 2 milliseconds. So we were pretty happy with that. So it now goes out every day. Should you wish, you can go and line up your own set-top box, and we promise that not only does it leave us in sync, but it gets to you in sync. So there we go. I shall hand back to Andy.
So that's actually the first time we can get rid of the OK leaving me, because that's now no longer good enough. It is OK arriving at you. Before we started to do this, we had about 20-30 complaints a week about us being out of sync, with only 2 changes, and they were less, I think, probably less than a frame in total.
Yeah.
After transmitting this, we went to 0. Nobody's complained since, except for 1 program that was out of sync. It was live, and it was out of sync. But we knew it was out of sync because we knew the chain was in sync, because it was in sync about 3 hours earlier during the Barker, and it was in tested again about 6 hours later when the Barker went out again. So we know it's in sync, and we're going to keep the channel in sync. And that does give us a great opportunity to stare at people and say, get it right, because we're right. Anyway, the we've coming back to the bit of this, we just sorry, I missed the slide out before. So we managed to get this whole thing back in sync. We managed to get it on air. We managed to get the program just as the votes went out back into HD and back in surround, which was good news because I think we were last that year. But it's really important to know what happened in the chain. What had actually happened was nothing. Everything had done exactly what it had been told to do, because the metadata was more important than the audio and the video. Because the metadata was wrong, it was saying, I've got this package, six audio channels, nothing wrong with them at all. Every broadcast device you put in the chain will decode them and you will hear them properly. The only person that hasn't got a broadcast device is the person sitting at home who's got a set-top box, who's totally reliant on what metadata leaves us. And that was the bit that was wrong. It had done exactly what it was told to do, which was to do absolutely nothing. Go to its default mode, and we wondered why Dolby D's default mode was transmit the centre channel only. Well, if you're in the cinema, good idea, actually, because 90% of the film comes from the centre channel. It's all the dialogue. The rest in the cinema is all surround, really. There's not really that much left and right, because it's a big auditorium, isn't it, to have a true left and right. And those people in the front 10 rows will get that image. So a default failing to dialogue only while you fix your fault is not a bad idea. In this particular case, it was probably the worst program to ever do that to. But now we've measured every point of the broadcast chain. We know exactly what's happened and we know what's going on. But what's next? What are we doing about it? Well, we're still getting audio problems, I'm afraid. Just to add to our little list, remember to say talk back on air disaster. Why do we get talk back on air? That's because we had embedded audio, as I've said. We have multiple audio tracks coming back. We had Radio 4 as well as talk back coming in. Fairly usual. Someone had got a talk back fault. Was trying to identify it, so shuffled it down the layers, because you can shuffle them all around now. We've got this Dolby E stuff everywhere. We've got lots of shufflers in place to correct things that go wrong. We can also listen to things where we shouldn't and put them where they shouldn't be. So that was a bit of finger trouble, and that was someone shuffling an audio channel from high level to a low level, a broadcast level, which should never be done. And I said so very loudly. The whole channel had intermittent holes for a while. Every single program. Some we could hear it on more than others. And actually, it seemed to be picture dependent, which is really annoying. And we tracked that down to one of the emergency side chains, one of the resilience chains within the new coding and multiplexing area that we've got. Only happened when we moved to there. We spent a week and a half chasing that, and then it vanished. It was really suspicious, because we changed an awful lot of the chain and it vanished, and we didn't believe what we just changed would have done that, because it was only a new device, so we could measure something. And I kept asking these guys, let us know, because they randomly change encoders on the output. Obviously, we don't have a main and a reserve coder. We have two main coders, and it can go from either of them. They've done a routine switch, not told anybody. So we said, it's that one. Can we switch back just to see? Yeah, it's there. Okay, switch away again. We found this nice bit of video from somebody in the Neurons, a company called one kids program, where it would do it in exactly the same place every single time. And so a quick burst of that. However, you know, we've gone from fatal disaster to very annoying. The worst possible one we did was Doctor Who, Waters of Mars. No surround sound. Because somebody had routed the ingest machine to do something else, had manually, and you've got SR machines, you can change everything. You can change what comes out of what hole, audio out of the video hole, video out of the audio hole, metadata out of the back end of it, tapes out of the front end of it. Everything can change. Hadn't bothered to put it back, so the Dolby E was turned off. The whole chain is automated. It recognises Dolby E as the switching signal to say this program is 5.1. Wasn't there. So, not fatal. The only one that wasn't fatal was the one we got every single complaint about. We had about three complaints about all of those. And hundreds about the fact Doctor Who wasn't, because the previous episode, the previous special was in 5.1. And all the DVDs are in 5.1. Anyway, but all I can say is we are in sync. Plus or minus 5 milliseconds is our target, which is a quarter of the EBUs recommended AV sync. We're measured still at plus or minus 2 milliseconds, which is where I want to stay. But, of course, we're dealing with servers. Servers do drift. So our target is to stay plus or minus 5, but I'd like to be plus or minus 2. Bearing in mind that from you to your television is 8 milliseconds worth of delay. We get people ringing us when we were going, still occasionally saying we're out of sync. We ignore them now because they say, I can see 1 millisecond out of sync. That means you can't look at anybody less than 1 inch away from them and not see them out of sync. Who knows what they're doing? So obviously we had a lot of people misadjusting their set, thinking they were in sync, and actually they weren't in sync. We just send them straight to the barker, say, I think it's on our wire, it's actually out of date now, I must update it, because every time they change the barker, they forget to tell me they've moved where the sync signal is, so I need to keep changing that. But actually we don't get any complaints about sync, which is really important. And it's all about audience education. And if you know, we've got the audience helplines, the website and everything else. We still get about close on 3,000 calls a month about HD. That rises and falls depending what's going on. And we get a huge number, 90,000 hits on the website per month, which is quite a massive amount. A lot of information is on there, and it's all about public education. Everybody has that works in the industry has to tell people we're not in a simple, you stick it on, you plug it in, and it all works. Yes, it does, but you're not going to get the best out of it anymore. You need, if you want the 5.1, to understand that there's delay. You need to adjust that delay. You need to get rid of your SCART lead. You need to sort out your audio to make sure it's properly positioned. You need to sort out your video, your television setup. It's all on our website. I've done blogs about the whole lot of it, so it's all there. But anyway, that's the end of what we've got to say. Thank you very much for listening. Rowan and I are around for any questions, if you want any. And I hope next month, Mr. Emmett, you get into the nuts and bolts of how really sync is measured. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Andy. It was very informative. If anybody has any questions, please speak into the microphone.
Thank you very much. Very informative. Two quick questions on the iPlayer. First of all, if you got to download the HD recording on iPlayer, do you have to have an HD-ready computer? And the second question is, sometimes on iPlayer, the subtitles go out of sync. Are they got anything to do with the audio stream? That's all.
Briefly, there isn't any... if you've got a non-HD-ready computer, you've got a tube, and you've got probably something that can't even run anything less than... What was the first version of Windows called? Windows 3 or something? If you've got any computer that's that's certainly less than 5 years old will run HD iPlayer. Any computer that's less than 2 years old will probably run extremely well.
Is it 1080?
No, it's 720. And that's big 720, because otherwise the file sizes are just too large at the moment.
Yeah.
You can't. Some people can stream. It's 3.5 megs. So with assuming you've got clear 3.5 megs, you must have at least 15 coming in, or capable of getting 15. You won't get it on an 8 meg connection for guaranteed streaming. Yes, you will sometimes a day, but downloads can take an incredible amount of time at 3.5 megs. So we decided to go for 720. Also, the display is still primarily a computer display. There aren't that many media centres yet. I think around the proportion of computers to media centres connected to a standard display are quite low. We're still looking at that and how we deal with that, because we have one other issue that 90% of them are stuck at 60 hertz refresh rate. Only people who know what they're doing change it to 75 or something like that. It gives you a fighting chance of not having updating pictures. But it's something that we hope that things like Canvas and other products will get people used to. I think that PS3 is actually a really good way of now getting iPlayer. If anybody's got a PS3, you've noticed doing the latest upload, you get the iPlayer icon. It's still not ready for download yet, but streaming is working.
And then
subtitles out of sync, probably down to your computer, although sometimes it is us.
But it's a separate stream on iPlayer to the audio, it's separate data.
I see you have an app for the Nintendo Wii as well, which seems
to... Yeah, I don't talk about that one because it's not HD, but you can talk about SD.
Yeah, we saw this all coming at Wimbledon a few years back, because they wanted a couple of extra courts, which are the old trucks, and we had, instead of a nice analog player going out, we had the analog, had the AS, and the embedder. And downstairs, they were quite happy with it, 6 o'clock Friday evening. So the AS leaving us fine. And poor Steve Locking, he suddenly realised that the embedder was complete garbage. So essentially, what you had to do was have the whole of Wimbledon running on one sync pulse generator. And boy, do we have fun and games that, getting that going.
Well, I mean, hands up, anybody that can still whistle Matlock tunes. Tones, I should say. Because we used to do it. I used to sit there driving Lime Grove back into sync with Television Centre, or VT into sync with Lime Grove back into sync again. So we, you know, but we did that. And we could, you know, I think we've lost some of our engineering skills because we actually rely on synchronizers too much now. And I think Dolby E is one of those things that's come along and shaken a lot of people.
You slide to the analog.
But, I mean, when you're looking at some signals coming in, quite frankly, you can't see the vectors on a low vector scope. They're going around so fast.
The vision lines, I guess it's all on our scope, it's fine.
Yeah.
And then Steve put the DM menu, where's all the audio?
It does take a lot more, and that's why audio is going out of sync. Because you're having to put in devices to deal with the fact that video is quite easy to keep in sync now. You know, a video synchronizer card in a unit, half a K, something like that now. In fact, it's probably there because, you know, think of the...
Can you use GPS?
Don't know. I mean,
you can.
Yeah.
You're getting messy.
Exactly. I think it just gets complicated. I mean, I know certainly I've spoken to the guys at Dolby about people trying to do that, and they say yes, it's possible, but our experience is don't try it.
I think the critical thing we've learned here is that this is why we got this idea of in sync within a unit. It doesn't matter how big that unit is, but the idea is to have a package where you know that what comes in and what comes out is in sync. Don't care what you do in the middle. You're one entity. Actually, you can subdivide OBs down. You should probably subdivide OBs down, say, this should be in sync, this should be in sync, this should be in sync. So when it comes to the master control area... That's a round building. It's fine.
A question from Bill.
Obviously, Andy, Dolby E has introduced some extra problems. Now that data rates are getting higher and, you know, we've got 3G HDSI, HDSDI, any chance of using, not having to use it in the future going forward? Will you have enough capacity to be able to move the data around uncompressed?
It's our ambition to get rid of it as soon as we possibly can. There is one issue, though. We will have to legislate for mixed down parameter. Because one bit we're stuck is there's the Dolby D from leaving us to arriving at home. That the home system is we're stuck with Dolby D. That is reliant on metadata. We can't transmit separate audio for stereo and surround. And we're either going to have to put some form of choice of mixed down parameter. In other words, you tell us what we are, we're going to dial it in for you, which does sound a bit crude, but actually is possible, can work. Or we're going to have to do what we did with stereo. And I remember when we started doing stereo, we were very, very conservative with stereo mixes. They were virtually slightly wider mono. Does anybody remember Laurie Taylor, the vision, the sound supervisor? Yeah. He used to say, every now and again, he would affect on the left and affect on the right, so his mum knew it was stereo and she was happy. But he was absolutely right. But for years, he used to mix that way. Everybody used to mix that way. Now, we're actually putting stuff... We would never do that, then what we do now. We're putting stuff so far left, so far right. We're assuming that it's always OK. In fact, you know, a 199 telly from Tesco is stereo. So we don't worry about it. I think that will happen in 5.1. It will take longer. But we're going to have to... I think we're going to have to compromise. We're going to have to start with very conservative 5.1 mixes and gradually expand. Yes, there are going to be people that want to experiment that can't, but I think we'll get more 5.1. The only other option I've got is to say, okay, here are the mixed down parameters, that's what you're going to work to. If you don't like it, do it in stereo, and I'll 5.1-ize it automatically with some nice Dolby device. Exactly. I don't think you'll like that.
Very quick question. Have you guys talked at all to any of the TV manufacturers about passing back the data about how much delay there is through their system? Because that is one of the... You have an HDMI link, you have that option to pass data back up to the receiver.
We've had discussions about that. There's a lot you can pass. I mean, there are a lot of things we want them to pass, but they don't. You know, PSF to P films, so you get much better resolution on films. Unfortunately, they've got their eye on 3D now.
Yes,
they're on. And HDMI 1.4 is all about 3D and whatever comes next. Okay, yeah, it might come eventually. But then you've got to think that you then got to legislate for or pair up. You know, if you buy a Panasonic and you get what's it, Viera Link or whatever it's called, it only works with Panasonic devices. You get Sony Link, only works with Sony. So you know, you've got to end up with people saying, "Well, I don't want that. I want my AV amp where it is. I want my set-top box because I like it. It's got a massive hard drive in it, and I don't like those tellies that work with it." So, yes.
Yes, but no.
We can say it to an extent, but fundamentally it's between the set-top box and the TV, and we don't have much control. But
I think with the rate of change or that's going on at the moment, it could be a long time before we can get rid of set-top boxes. I think it's going to be several years, 8 to 10 years, before integrated tellies are flexible enough to do everything we need them to do. You don't have to look at the free sat boxes. You know, how many boxes, how it's even worse, how many HD ready Freeview box, Freeview TVs are out there that won't receive Freeview HD? Well, all of them. Yes. Every single one of them, including that one.
Yes.
There's some litigation waiting to happen.
Any other questions?
A quick point about when we went to stereo. The funniest one was when we were doing it was at Grand National a few years back, and one of the remote commentaries, they sent it out of phase, so every time you cut to them in mono they vanished, but when you're listening in stereo they sounded a bit vague. That was a cause of much mirth and hilarity, I can tell you.
There's worse in 5.1.
Well, I've got a question for you, if no one else. The test signal you were playing, is there any way to build something into the television that would automatically detect the synchronisation and therefore...
Technically, not even that complicated.
With your light sensor, if you built in the light sensor into the television...
If anybody wants a circuit diagram for the probulator, as it's been called...
It's
all you need is an old oscilloscope, when looking at the if you saw the light probe, it's an old PO jack with the core had taken out and the light, the LED, the photosensor sensor put inside that. It is a true R&D device.
Oh yeah,
Andrew Mason made device. Yeah. I did that mistake.
Andy,
he's got a Mark II. He hates us showing that one because his Mark II is very
flashy.
Yeah,
the new one looks better.
If he hates to be showing it, you will always show it.
Absolutely. Exactly. Absolutely, because it was the first one.
And it's the one we actually used, to be fair.
In a couple of years, put it on eBay, it'll be worth the
fall. Yeah, probably.
Actually, I don't know where it is at the moment. I linked it to somebody.
It's my baby, that is.
I know, we've got it back again. Sorry about that, but I just realised I did lend it to somebody. It sits in my cupboard next to a bottle of cider. Because I always find it's in sync better, when you've got more leeway when you've drunk it.